Hey, America.
Start listening now.
Going great.
Not bad.
Yeah. We tried to do it the best for your birthday, Eric.
Yay.
Thanks, you guys.
It's just his birthday.
True.
Just one day ago.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. As of recording, I am old. I imagine by the time this releases, I will still be old, I think.
You gotten your AARP card yet?
Eric, what was it like surviving the Lusitania?
You know what? It was a lot like, maybe just cut to the music. And welcome to another aging episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision podcast from America, the country with cool theme music. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny.
I said I was going to come up with something funny. Turns out I was wrong.
Well, it wound up being kind of apt because you said this is an aging episode and our main topic this week is certainly going to be something that aged questionably.
Questionably or awesomely?
No, it's we'll get to it, but I'm of the opinion that like things that were cool 8 years ago are way less cool than things that were cool like 20 years ago or even 1 year ago. It's a very strange time.
It feels like just yesterday, but yeah, I suppose you're right. Nostalgia. Anyway, we'll get to that in just a moment. In the meantime, if you want to follow our random crazy rantings and ravings, feel free to follow us on social media over at Twitter or Facebook at 12pointsUSA. You can email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com or scope out our website at 12pointsfromamerica.com.
We know here at 12 Points from America that when it comes to the internet, you have your choice in crazy rantings and ravings. And we appreciate that you choose this podcast.
Yes, there's a wide plethora of rantings and ravings the world over. So, yeah, thanks for spending it with us. Let us know what you think. We'll have some ranting and raving of your own and let us know what you think, but only if you like this. And if you're following us on your favorite podcast purveyor and it allows you the opportunity to leave reviews or star ratings or whatnot, give us some feedback. We're always happy to hear it. So it's the quiet season.
It's the quiet season. And you know, when it's the quiet season, what we have to do
is
go back to the less quiet season. and that means looking at an old Eurovision. And this week we somewhat arbitrarily, not completely, I don't think, we picked the year 2011 as our Eurovision rewatch of choice for ourselves.
As far as Eurovisions of the past 10 years, this is like this is definitely in the top half. This is a good year. This is a wild year.
This year is bonkers.
Yeah,
this is a crazy year.
It's like a like anything from Germany. It's like a good bottle of Riesling, very sweet, a little bit corked. If it's not stored quite right, I don't know where I'm going with this metaphor. I think I just want a glass of wine. But yeah, 2011 was a banner year in my opinion. But I'm also highly biased considering that 2011 was the first year that I actually spent behind the scenes on at the contest. Yeah. So I will see this year through very very rose-colored glasses. No shame.
Yeah. And I will not
make trying to make it a back to back. There were three things that you needed this year. Either you needed a full like jazz string setup on stage, you needed a dance crew, or you needed some man yelling at you in a foreign language. I literally don't think there is an exception to what I just said. Everyone was either one of those things.
It should be noted that for the sake of brevity, because you know how we can rant, we are specifically going to be focusing on the final. That, you know, so we're going to see a lot of songs tossed by the wayside. We may give them, you know, a little bit of an homage later on, songs like Nai Not or Sinit Stand By. This is the first year we saw Sinit, and so far it's the only year that we've seen Sinit, but you know how it is. But
you can't keep a bad San Marino down.
Nope, no matter how hard you try. But yeah, so we are going to be focusing primarily on the actual final itself. So I had seen this one, like I said, live in person. I was in the arena when everything went down. Derek, I know that you had seen the show a couple years ago.
Six
years ago. Eric, had you seen the show previously?
I did. When they started showing a new Eurovision every week towards the end of the year last year, and they were kind of just moving backwards, and they went until 2010. So 2011 was released for one of those weeks. And I remember watching it then. And I'm going to be honest, I remember being very underwhelmed by it the first time and just sort of thinking like, this was just a down year. And this was interesting to see, but I will pass. Thank you for your time. It was not...
was not a
big fan of that one. Having said that, I watched it again this week. My opinions have changed a bit, and we'll get to that momentarily.
Now, Danny, had you seen this in full before?
I think so. I watched this one back during the spate, like, you know, months ago when they started to release all of these ones from, you know, the past decade.
Yeah.
I definitely had seen this show before. How can you forget a performance in Dusseldorf? But like Eric, largely forgot about it and discarded it until I watched it again today. And my opinions have also changed, largely for the better.
Okay.
I'll say I didn't think much of it first time I watched it, but it was kind of part of my introduction to Eurovision in general, so it was hard to process everything year to year.
Yeah, when I was first introducing you, Derek, to the contest, it was, as I always often say, drinking out of a fire hose. I basically was like, oh, there's a person who's interested in learning about this. Let me show him everything.
We watched a different show every week.
It's amazing that you still talk to me, honestly.
That is amazing.
Eric, could you tell Sam
that he's never forgiven me? So where do we want to start with our little retrospective? We're not going to go through every single song, or else we'll be here, you know, for eons. But we kind of wanted to run through a couple of categories of our favorite and least favorite moments, overrated or underrated songs, stagings that we thought stood out for better, for worse, costuming, vocal performances. And then we would kind of sum it up with a sort of a personal top five, because it's not a retrospective episode from 12 Points from America without some sort of momentous bit of drama and countdownery. So
everyone loves a little bit of countdownery.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start out with the song that's either the most over or underrated. If only because I'd like to get this category out of the way right away, I have no context for how rated some of the songs are this year, you know, except for Azerbaijan.
Yeah, I mean, are you looking at it by overrated and underrated in terms of
placement on the voting table?
Yeah, or how the fans were kind of hyping things up or not mentioning things before the actual contest. There are a couple of different ways that we can go with this.
I'd say to each their own.
I'm going
to
go for the low-hanging fruit here. Actually, it's kind of weird because a song that was underrated in terms of the fan push that ended up being sort of overrated on its eventual place in the scoreboard, it was Azerbaijan.
Yes.
Yep.
Nobody.
If we're going to go off of just what the table is, there's. I said this before we started recording, but there is no universe that I can imagine where Azerbaijan deserves to win.
Yeah, running.
Not with this song, anyway.
Not with this song. This song didn't deserve the last place, I suppose.
No,
but
it wasn't bad by any stretch. It was a fine, cromulent song, but
it's so unremarkable, though, I think, is the problem.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching the performance, you know, knowing, okay, this is the song that's eventually going to win this thing. And I just remember thinking, how? How is this it? It is as though if 2019 rolled around with Duncan Lawrence, a big favorite, and a handful of other really, really fantastic songs, a bunch of really, really great songs. And then for no discernible reason, Love is Forever ended up in first place.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of how it feels like. Love is Forever didn't deserve to get last place, but no, it doesn't win.
No,
for 2011, was it just that they were pretty? They were just that pretty?
They were very pretty. It should also be noted that this was the year that Turkey failed to qualify out of the semifinal, that they fell at that first post. So maybe some of the diaspora that, you know, people are always talking about, instead of going to what would have been Turkey, it's like, oh, well let's do their next door neighbors, their cultural brothers over in Azerbaijan.
Yeah, sure. And that's not an insignificant.
Did that failure to qualify also make Turkey rage quit Eurovision?
No, they showed up to Azerbaijan the next year because they're basically
gotcha. But the seed was planted.
Yeah, it was. It started a bitter taste in the mouth. Yeah.
So when you take a closer look at the question, why did this win? I think there's a number of factors. I think you're right that the Turkish diaspora went for it, which gave it a wider swath of points than would normally be, you know, what you see in a voting spread for a country like that. That being said, it was also just a very divided year. There was really no clear winner whatsoever.
Mm.
There were 25 songs in the final, in 43 countries voting. 20 of the 25 songs got at least 1/12. That's
incredible.
That is insane.
That's incredible.
80% of the songs in the running got a 12 points from somebody. Mm-hmm. I want to say 24 of the 25 got at least 1/8 or higher.
That's impressive.
With, I believe, Estonia, the only one whose name was never said during our 8, 10, 12. Everybody else got at least one, and that's crazy. Because there's usually at least a song or two that everyone agrees is, what's the word, garbage. And not so in 2011. It was really sort of a weirdly even year. Mm. And what happened with Running Scared, our winner, could potentially have happened to a half a dozen other countries. I mean, there were two or three countries that got more 12s than Azerbaijan did.
Yep. Those were Bosnia and Herzegovina had 5 12 points, and Italy had 4.
So only three 12s for the country that won the contest. 36 of your points came from 12s, and you got another like 200 from just middling votes for everybody. Everybody was just kind of fine with it. And somehow in 2011, that was...
That's what it took.
That's
what it took.
This is kind of a low winning score too, isn't it?
Yeah, relatively speaking. Especially compared to, I mean, granted, you can't really use the same metric now as you did a couple of years ago. But yeah, winning was 221 points for Azerbaijan over Italy's 189. If you compare that to the scores from previous year, 2010, I'm not going to go the other direction because Euphoria was sort of a beast unto itself. Mm-hmm. But Lena had won for Germany the year before with 246 points and a margin of 170. a margin over Turkey's second place, which they had 170, I mean. So
that's a pretty big gap.
Yeah, it's a bit more of a tighter contest this time around.
On the topic of stats related to 2011 that I thought were interesting, your mileage may vary on this, obviously, but with 43 competitors, and because this was held in Germany, one of the big five, there was not a sixth automatic qualifier to the final, which means this year had 18 non-qualifiers, which is tied for the most of all time.
Mm.
2008 in Serbia also had 18 non-qualifiers, but that's a lot.
That is a lot.
It's a lot of songs that don't get to the final.
A lot of broken hearts and a lot of early plane tickets back home.
A lot of missed opportunities.
Yeah.
Pretty sad.
Tis.
So are we just all across the board basically saying, thanks to this strange spread of votes that resulted in Azerbaijan winning, Azerbaijan is just kind of our automatic overrated song of the year?
I think if that's the metric that we're looking at in terms of impact of song versus actual eventual score, kind of.
Honestly, yeah. It is, by the way, since 2010, it is one of only two songs that won Eurovision without winning its semifinal. That's not counting Satellite, since Satellite wasn't in a semifinal. But do you know who the other one is?
Hmm.
It wasn't Duncan. Wouldn't have been Netta.
Was it Jamala?
Jamala.
Ah, that's right.
Jamala was second place in her semifinal in 2016. And similarly, Running Scared was second place in its semifinal in 2011. So it didn't even win its semi. And then somehow, obviously, voting is very different. Doubling the number of countries that can give you points, potentially.
Yep, shuffling the deck. All that.
That's another fun fact.
Thanks, Statmotron.
The Eurovision Statmotron is coming along very nicely. I'm very excited to have found a bit of a groove and added a bunch more information to it. I found out today, since 2010, the semifinal winner that did the worst in the final by a huge margin.
Ooh, I think I saw your tweet on this, but lay it on us for those of you who don't tweet.
That's how you write a song. Won its semifinal in 2018 and finished 15th in the grand final.
Aww.
We all just needed an additional week to realize the mistake that just what happened.
Yeah. He won his semi pretty handily too.
It was
not close.
But like I said before, when the deck is shuffled and you get twice the number of countries chipping in and voting and all their voices being heard, it's a very, very different contest.
And he had other problems too.
Yeah.
He got really sick and his performance really suffered.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Mafia pressure. So,
all right, so let's flip this on its head a little bit. What do we think were some of the underrated songs Finland. That all right, Danny, you have the floor, go for it.
Finland didn't deserve a bottom five finish, not with that song. Fine, they got the classic shaft of being forced to go first. That's what I think it was,
which at that point was actually a random draw, so he was really quite unlucky.
Finland with a very fine song. There are other sappy songs that are way sappier and with worse lyrics and worse performances. This guy did great with a fine song. Finland really got handed the bad end of the stick this year.
But I will say he had the good fortune of having a very visually impactful staging.
Yes, as the first, as the first, as the
first, as, yeah, as the first, but as the first song that a lot of the viewers are seeing, to finally see the earth rising behind him, it was a very impactful moment. I mean, for some really wonderful television, that's sort of, oh, this is what that stage can do. And even this little tiny subtle song to have that sort of massive earth rise, it was a really very cool moment.
It worked really well for him.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of interesting that you say that they drew their position rather than drew their half. The show runs very smoothly given the circumstances. Like, I wouldn't have thought that, oh, these are all randomly placed. They kind of, the songs flowed one into another pretty well.
I thought there was a point about 6 or 7 songs in where it definitely felt like this was a random draw because I'm just looking at the running order here. You go Hungary, What About My Dreams, Jedward Lipstick, Eric Sade, Popular, Get Her Johnny, Rockefeller Street. Like, all of those in a row is pretty intense. Oh, and then Greece. Almost forgot Grease, like right after that. So that run of 5 is pretty wild.
Yeah, and I think in a producer-led running order, having Francis Sonneau, having the operatic ballad, followed by the Italian jazz ballad, I think would not fly nowadays. Hmm. I think those two would have been better off separated in a producer-led running order. But I'm not a producer. I'm just, you know.
I think my most underrated song from this year, the one that I kind of just judge this as like the song that made me think, wait a minute, who was that? Or that was really cool. What was the deal with this song? Was Nadine Baylor, The Secret is Love from Austria. I quite liked this one. It takes a little while to get going. There are some serious vocal acrobatics towards the end, some very good harmonies and things like that. And I thought this was a very solid song. It finished in 18th place and definitely deserved better than that. I really like that one.
Derek, what do you think?
Underrated? This one is kind of tough. For me personally, I know this song is not popular and people don't tend to like it, but I really liked Spain this year. I thought it was a lot of fun. It had this almost Caribbean feel to it.
I couldn't say underrated for this one because, well, I guess I could because it finished, what,
it like finished 23rd.
Third to last.
Yeah. I don't think it was that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad.
A feel. No. Anyway, it's great.
Yeah, it was
that's
just,
what it sounds.
Yeah, it was just sunny and sweet and enjoyable, and it was fluffy. It was it was cotton candy.
I think it's really catchy.
And appear in another category later tonight.
I think it was really catchy. It's the kind of song I'd want to hear at a club or something, and it's very positive and upbeat. And I remember at Euroclub last year, I won't say who, but somebody literally said, I hate this song more than any other. If they keep playing it, I'm going to leave.
Wow.
Come on, man.
Oh.
This is the year of running scared.
Yeah, seriously.
I hate this song more than any other. What if they put on Euro Nero? Would they be able to dance to that one?
That was next year. We'll get to that some other episode.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, we better. For me, I mean, it's really hard to pick. Even like since we started recording this episode, I've changed my answer a handful of times. I'm going to have to go, and this is, again, not necessarily a popular one with the fans, but in terms of quality of songs, emotion, heartfeltness, and just the sort of organic nature of the song, the fact that Iceland only came in 20th place with Coming Home by Shawnee's Friends, I thought was heartbreaking, but not surprising.
Yeah, not surprising. I'd say that.
And again, I'm seeing this through an extra lens of I got to meet these folks and I know the story behind Coming Home. And I'm guessing you guys already know it, but for those of you listening at home, the Sione of Sione's Friends was a guy by the name of Sione Brink, who actually passed away very, very suddenly just right before his national final. And instead of withdrawing the song, 6 of his friends basically stood up and says, we'll sing in his place. We'll do as an exhibition. And it ended up winning the whole national final. Hmm. And it was translated from Icelandic into English by his widow, Thorun Clausen, who's a lovely woman. And then they ended up taking the song all the way to the Eurovision final. And when they actually qualified out of the semifinal, they were the last name drawn out of the envelope. There were a bunch of heavy hitters that people thought were going to qualify. You know, everybody thought Norway was going to make it through, Turkey, Armenia. It's like, oh, one of those. Nobody was going to vote for Little Iceland. And they pulled the name out of the hat and everybody is bawling and just... I saw them in the press center afterwards and everybody, you know, like the eyes were just red with tears and just, it was just a really, really touching moment. And I can't get that image of the story away from the song. And I love it so, so much. So for me, 20th place, I understand why it came in 20th place, but damn it, it shouldn't have.
See, this is the Eurovision movie that we should have.
I know. Parts of this legitimately sound like they're part of the Eurovision movie.
I'm honestly surprised that we didn't see any of them, any of the six members of the band or Thorin in the background of the Eurovision movie, considering, you know, it's not that big of an island.
Mm-hmm. We know. Busy.
Okay, with that out of the way, what's the next category we're going to hit?
Well, we've already done most over and underrated song. Why don't we look at our staging? Best and worst staging, or favorite and least favorite staging.
We can start at that.
Yeah, we'll go positive first. Start it off with the best staging. Who wants to start?
I'll start.
All right, you do it.
Okay, we can't spend too much time here, and I'm not going to explain myself too much. You know, I like what I like. The answer is Moldova. Moving on to Eric. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, Moldova had this absolutely wild, it was like a gypsy ska punk. It was very 2011. It was great. Anyway, they had everyone in like long cone party hats and a unicorn woman on a unicycle. It was great. It was a very Danny song.
Yeah, that was definitely Zobchi Stube's So Lucky. And Danny, had you ever actually watched Zobchi Stube's first Eurovision performance?
So they have one before this.
Yeah, they were Moldova's first entrant, singing for them in 2005 in Kiev with a song called Bunica Bate Dobo, or Grandma Beats the Drum.
I'm so glad.
I highly recommend
Gogo Bordello cover, of course. Yes.
If you liked So Lucky, I would recommend watching Bunica Bate Dobo.
All right. Eric, what's yours?
I feel like I'm probably not going to be the only person to say that Germany had the strongest staging of 2011.
It was simple.
It's simple, yet so effective and so moody.
Yeah.
Like atmospheric. That was easily one of my favorite performances of the whole show, in that it just...
Yeah. Perfect for the song.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, it's perfectly staged for the song. It just works so well, and that makes it stand out so much from the songs around it. Just looking, this one was right after Moldova.
There was a memorable slew there in the middle.
Yeah, it was United Kingdom, then Moldova, then Germany. So
something for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This song is really cool. It's better than Satellite, and...
Yes, agree.
It's so cool. It's just cool.
I also love the fact that I feel like no other country could put a staging like Taken by a Stranger in the way that Germany could. I like seeing when a country sends a little bit of cultural flair in its hometown entry. And
With the Lederhosen.
Well, yes, of course. But the moment that I saw the staging and how they were doing it, my brain went right to Metropolis.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And that sort of aesthetic, it just hit me immediately. I'm like, okay, this is Germany. This is cool, sleek, modernistic, futuristic Germany at its coolest. And now is
Robot
the time
dancer.
On And now is the time on Sprockets when we dance. And it was all of those things, like that precise, sleek design. Yeah, this is pure Deutschland, and I loved it for it. So yeah, Eric took my number one pick for this. My second favorite for best staging, you're gonna laugh at this, but for the song that it was, for the kind of song that it was, and for the artist that it was, I have to give Jedward their due.
Fine.
Oh, yeah.
I have to give it to Lipstick.
Yeah.
When Ireland said that they were bringing Jedward, that you knew they were gonna send something bright and energetic and madcap and over the top and teen pop glam rock weirdness that only two hyperactive Irish boys with sky-high quiffs and shoulder pads could do. They were Liberace's linebackers, and I love them.
God, those shoulder pads.
Oh, my God.
Those shoulder pads.
Shoulder pads. They're nuts, and I love them.
That's great. Do you prefer Lipstick or the song they sent the following year?
Between the two, I'd have to give it to Lipstick, personally. Yeah.
I could not agree more. Mm-hmm. There's a reason I said the one they did the following year, because I don't even remember what it was called.
Waterline, yeah.
Water, yeah. I remember there's water, because there's a lot of water involved.
I remember that song, Waterline.
Yeah. I was defeated, you won the line. Anyway, Jedward.
Yeah.
This was the year we were blessed with Jedward.
We sure. Derek, do you agree?
My number one was Ireland.
Do you agree? Okay, yeah.
It was Ireland?
It was Ireland, of course.
Yay.
I would say, before watching the show again, I hadn't seen in a few years, that one stood out more than anything else. And it's wild and energetic. It feels very focused, though. Like, it's not too much. It's a lot, but it's not too much. And it's you know, kind of infectious in its energy. I don't feel like I'm being overwhelmed. And there's other songs I feel like they do way too much with their staging, and it's just like, whoa, slow down. I thought this one kind of hit that sweet spot. Also, it looks like a Target ad.
Yeah.
It does.
What I wrote down was, is this great or is it the worst? It has the aesthetics of a 2012 Levi's ad.
Well, I think it's great.
It's probably great.
It has that standout, immediate, attention-grabbing feel to it that, like, Every Way That I Can had, or that She Got Me had, or a song like that. It's immediately there and demands your focus. It's great. I'll be talking about it more.
So the worst staging now, I'll start just because I began this round too. I'll start every time. I'm going to say Slovenia, if only because it's the polar opposite of what Germany did right. They didn't put any bells and whistles on it, and I really feel like they should have. It's just Slovenia was just like, great, this is my favorite 2008 Kelly Clarkson video. We got five girls in leather singing a song in front of lights. And I couldn't care less about this song.
I liked Slovenia.
Yeah, but they also had the worst staging.
Fine, whatever.
Tell me who had worst staging. That's right. Eric goes to Slovenia. Sam?
I'm going to talk a little bit about Slovenia a little bit later on. I mean, for me, none of the songs to me made me gasp like, oh my God, what are they doing? If anything, there were songs that may have been a little bit too minimalistic or just didn't necessarily bring the fire that I would have liked to have seen. I thought that Russia was kind of underwhelming for me. They tried to be slick and it came off as smarmy.
But was Russia worse than, say, Dads in Jeans?
Now, which Dads in Jeans song are you talking about? I feel like
this is the problem with this year.
Yeah, because there was...
Iceland.
Oh, I guess, you know. I mean, that was different because that was supposed to be the sort of like barnyard, home howdy kind of barn dance kind of feel. That wasn't supposed to be too slick. But for me, like I said, I know we were focusing on the final, but I have to say, Croatia, what the hell were you doing?
So this is their semifinal?
This would have been their semifinal song, Daria Kenzer's Celebrate. They tried to do a sort of triple or quadruple quick change with a magician who looked like a blend between Jack White and way too much cocaine. And it was just creepy. And he was kind of lurking around in a way that just felt very menacing. And it was just... They would just try to throw as much stuff as they could at a song that really wasn't that great. None of the songs in the final really hit me as badly, badly staged. Maybe a bit underwhelming, but I would say do yourself a favor and watch the Croatian entry, but don't. Just don't.
All right. Because what I'm visualizing is, you know that one episode of Peep Show where they get everyone to contribute to like the Toyota ad? And it's just very menacing, and they're like, can I get ya? Is it like that?
I haven't seen it, but from what you're describing, maybe.
Derek, do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but...
Oh, okay.
So just watch that instead, is what you're saying.
Okay.
All right. Honestly, that sounds like an amazing train wreck. Well, it sounds like it could be an amazing train wreck, but what I'm hearing you say is that it's...
An unendurable one.
It is, to put it in a way that seems weird when I'm about to say it out loud, the bad kind of train wreck.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, no, the bad
as opposed to, you know, good ones. Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. At Eurovision, there are good train wrecks and there are bad train wrecks.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Your average Serhat song is a great train wreck.
Oh, yes. Mwah.
Freaky would have been an incredible train wreck in the best possible way.
Listen, that's train wreck? Question mark?
Yeah.
If by train wreck you mean winning Eurovision, I agree.
Yeah. Yes, true. If by less train wreck and more party on a hovercraft.
Yes.
Yeah, we can have that.
Yes.
Okay. I think Freaky would have done pretty well. I think.
Yeah.
I didn't actually pick a worse staging for because like Sam said, there weren't any that were just like this is a disaster.
Yeah, no disaster. But
there are plenty where it's just like, well, this isn't good, but it's not like this is so much of a mess that I need to write a note about that.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's a positive.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
As fun as it is to have, I mean, I think it's fun to have one or two of those in any particular final. that's just a complete mess, because it gives you, in a weird way, a more complete package.
It rounds out the Eurovision smorgasbord,
right?
You know,
right?
Yeah.
But not having one isn't exactly a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I got one. Jesus.
Bring it.
Watching the show again, I was kind of surprised because it seemed like no one really knew what to do with the LEDs. And there were only a few countries that really took advantage of it. And I think
that's true.
Germany and Ireland really went all out on the background.
Mm. But Russia didn't ignore it.
Didn't ignore it, but like some of them were just very simple colors, lights, maybe stars.
It reminded me a lot of the Benjamin Ingrosso song 2 years ago.
That was cool, though. That was deliberate. This one, do you think a lot of countries just like didn't know what to do with a screen that big? And so they were just like, we don't want it.
We've never had a screen that big.
The thing is, they had, you know, Moscow 2 years previous had massive screens and LEDs and the floors and the background and the circular, massive detachable donut in the ceiling there. I mean, this isn't the first time that we had LEDs. You know, the previous year they kind of stripped back and did kind of like what they did in Lisbon, where they kind of took away the LEDs. But this wasn't, you know, they had had them before.
Hmm. It seemed like they hadn't. It seemed like a lot of people just didn't want to deal with it, or they thought it would take away from the performance.
Yeah, maybe.
That screen dwarfed the performers so much.
Yeah, well, it was a massive, massive venue, so they tried to fill up as much as they could.
Is this, Sam, the biggest Eurovision in terms of like number of fans in the?
No, I think 2001 in Copenhagen may have been the largest over at the Parken Stadium, which held about 35,000. I think Düsseldorf was around that, but the layout of the Parken was such that it felt a lot bigger, and it kind of to the contest detriment. I think 2011 was staged in a way that it felt huge, but it didn't feel like a stadium show. You know what I mean?
Sure.
There's a big difference between like a show in a stadium and like a stadium show. It didn't feel like a Super Bowl halftime show or anything like that.
Sure. Yeah. And that's I feel like the big thing that we're trying to avoid with any Eurovision performance.
Right. So
still haven't said my overrated yet.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Your most overrated song?
No, most overrated staging. Worst staging.
Oh, sorry. The worst staging.
Yeah, I'm so sorry staging. About that.
I was very concerned.
Go for it.
Okay. I also didn't get to say my worst overrated, but whatever. So, staging.
Is it Azerbaijan?
No, it wasn't.
Oh.
Well, speak up, man. What was it? Let's rewind a little bit, Derek.
No, it's the same country.
Oh. Well, so this is convenient.
It's Sweden.
Ooh.
I hated this song. I don't think I disliked it the first time, but hearing it again, wow. It just visually, it felt busy. It felt like there's just too much going on. They had the windows set up, and then at one point, one of them breaks, and I...
Yeah, they're like walking through these frames. They have me for 10 seconds with the Boney M sample, and then all of a sudden, we're just... these girders are going to fall on someone, and I'm surprised they didn't.
I'm totally with you, actually. I had Sweden as my second most overrated song, and it didn't take it just because of the fact that it didn't win.
Yeah.
But the fact that it rhymed possible with possible...
And that's popular with popular.
I hate
and
that.
Popular and then popular again.
Yeah. And as somebody who was desperately unpopular in high school, like I just have a deep-seated hatred of this. But I'll have a story as we get to our favorite and least favorite moments.
Fair enough.
We'll come back to this. But I definitely feel where you're coming from, Derek.
Listening to it again, it felt like this song was written to do well at Eurovision and then it'd be immediately forgotten. And
Sweden.
Yeah, it felt so hollow, and visually I couldn't put anything together, and it just felt messy, and I got kind of frustrated watching it.
I think it's an all right song. I don't think it's top three material, which is where it finished, was third.
Yep.
But I remember watching it and thinking a couple of things. One is that I will be popular, I will be popular, repeat ad nauseum, is not that far removed from those guys that sang We Are the Winners of Eurovision.
We Are the Winners of Eurovision, yes.
It's a little more subtle, but honestly, it does kind of read the same way. And the other thing is, I feel like there's some sort of, and if drop us a line if you're more knowledgeable about music theory than I am. There's some sort of modulation or something between the verses and the chorus. And there, it feels a bit disjointed to me anyway, that there's, I don't know, they almost sound not to like Icebreaker from 2016 levels, or whatever year that was. But it almost feels like the verses and choruses are part of are part of two separate songs. It doesn't quite gel.
Yeah, I hear that.
And I agree that it's definitely overrated. I don't think it's bad. I think it's a decently well done song. But obviously Sweden can do much better. They did the following year and a few years after that and so on. This one, I think, is not in that echelon at all as some of the better Swedish bangers that we've gotten over the years.
Mm. All right. Are we ready to move on then? Next category? So everybody said their piece?
But yep. Also, yeah.
Why don't we do a quick look into costuming? I know that this is obviously an audio podcast, so, you know, we'll talk about a song. Feel free to do a quick Google image search, see what...
What
the heck we're talking about.
I'll just get mine out of the way. My best and worst costume award goes to Moldova. My notes on this basically said the song is called So Lucky because that's what they are, that those cones stay on their heads. And then one of them had a unicycle, and I just love Eurovision. Yeah, definitely the most memorable costumes and also the worst costumes. That's it.
Yep.
That's the tweet.
It's very coincidental because literally for this category, I have worst costume and best costume for Jedward. Ireland. What did you say? Liberace's linebackers?
Yes,
that's
I did.
What they are. That's... This is either terrible or fantastic. And in the end, the answer is both.
Because it's Eurovision and you can have both. Derek, what about you?
I mean, since we're doing both our best and worst, none of the costumes really stood out to me as, like, phenomenal. I don't remember anyone wearing anything that stood out as being spectacular. I gave it to France.
What are you talking about? Georgia was wearing the most fantastic Christmas tree decoration that they could.
Hit one of the Barber decks.
That's the one I figured. I gave it to France just because I felt like it seemed like the most appropriate costume for what he was singing. Like, it looked like an opera performance. Or he came off of Les Mis or something.
True.
So it seemed to fit. Like the whole aesthetic kind of worked really well for him. Also, okay. I said my worst was Ireland. I mean, jeez, as soon as those guys come out with this, I was like, what is this?
Oh, man, you should have seen the costumes that they were wearing at the... actually, they were wearing crazy, crazy stuff in their press conferences in Baku. One day they came in dressed as gumball machines. One day they came in dressed as boxes of popcorn. Yeah, this was...
It's the Lady Gaga of Irish boy bands.
Yeah, but 2011, they were positively subtle compared to their behind-the-scenes garb in 2012. For me, my favorite costume, I had to give it to the Serbians. That sort of swinging 60s mod.
Yeah.
Those technicolor bright, it gave it an immediate sense of place. I lusted after Nina's dress. I absolutely loved that look. I actually ended up seeing this very similar dress in a store not long after, and I immediately bought it. I do still have it. God only knows if it fits, but that's a question for another day, I suppose. But yeah, the outfits for Chadoban I thought were just absolutely perfect for the song that they were doing. I also had to give props to Slovenia for the outfits that Maja Kautz was wearing. I loved her boots in particular, and I wish that I could pull those off without falling on my face. So I wanted to give her an honorable mention. And for least favorite, like, nothing was really terrible in the final. I thought that maybe Estonia looked a little bit... They're going for, like, fantastical and cartoonish, and to me just kind of came out a little bit like Minnie Mouse knockoff and a little bit cheap. But that's the worst I can say.
Well, good, because their song sucked.
Well, I'm not talking about the song. I'm just talking about her outfit for Rockefeller Street. We get there.
Move on to some more holistic things. What about the best and worst, just individual moments of the show?
Sam, I kind of want to just yield my time to you on this, because you were there. I want some more stories from the ground.
Oh, man.
In Dusseldorf. The deuce.
I mean, the deuce. I think that when Dusseldorf was selected as the host city, there were a lot of people, especially people who had gone to the contest a number of times before, who were kind of disappointed. Like, why not Berlin? Why not Hamburg? Why not more of the, you know, stereotypical fun German cities? Like, Dusseldorf isn't really a tourist destination, which is a shame because I thought the city was charming. They had a great Euro club that year. The beer was flowing very, very regularly. And lucky for me, I like beer. I had a great time. And like I said, I'm seeing this through rose-colored glasses not just because I was there, but because it was my first time there. So everything was shiny and new, but it was just wonderful. It was incredible. Like, I'd been a fan of the show for so many years, and to finally have my chance to see it from that other angle, it was really magical. And meet the artists and meet these other journalists that are now basically members of my extended family. That entire experience was one two-week example of one of the best moments of my life. So it's hard to pick out single moments. Being flirted with by a Greek songwriter was very nice. Then I got my heart broken by that same Greek songwriter.
Bastard.
I know, he was just being so like sweet and overly effusive and Greek, yeah. And he's like, oh, Sam, you should really come to the Greek party. I would really, really love to see you there. And I get there and I'm dressed to the nines and he introduces me to his girlfriend and I'm like, no, damn it, no, no.
Now that's the Eurovision movie we should have had.
No, no, no. And I can't believe I just shared this with the podcast. But, you know, this is ancient history, though. This is almost 10 years ago. So, yeah, that was, even the bittersweet moments are still great ones. You know, walking around half drunk outside of the Euro Club in the Altstadt, which is like this collection. They refer to it as the world's longest bar area of the town that's just bar after bar after bar after bar after bar. And me and one of my friends, we were, you know, we'd tired of dancing. So we were just walking up and down the neighborhood. And she's like, okay, she was a local. She's like, okay, follow me. I know the best place to get a little bit of drunk food. And she brings me to this hole in the wall, like rotisserie spot. And they had Schweinshaxe. So like ham hocks, like rotating on the spits and the skin getting all crispy. And just, they took a slice of that, put it on like this perfect bread with a, you know, a dash of this incredible Dusseldorf mustard. And it sobered me up immediately in a way that I've never been. It was incredible. Like, that ham hock sandwich changed my life. So yeah, I could wax poetic about all of the little moments for the rest of my life. So yeah, Dusseldorf, it was freaking magic to me. So yeah, somebody else take this. This isn't the Sam show. Come on.
The best moment of the entire show was Jan Ulla Sand desperately asking for more time because he needs to find a way to crunch the numbers so that Azerbaijan can't win. Please, please go. I don't know. Call Madonna. Have her do something. I need to find a way to get rid of 30 points really quick.
Yeah, and that was his first contest too. So yes. You can almost imagine the wheels turning in his head. It's like, oh my God, I have to do this again in Azerbaijan.
Tied for me with the requisite Cyprus gives 12 points to Greece and everyone boos. I love it every single time it happens. Cyprus is always like, and our 12 points go to, and then it's literally like everyone in the stadium is just like, it's Greece, great. And then they go, Greece, and everyone goes, boo! It's my favorite tradition. It's like a mystery play when Satan enters the stage and everyone goes, boo! It's great.
I want to take a second and highlight a couple of things that are outside of the 25 songs from the final itself. Honestly, one of my favorite songs from the whole thing, it wasn't in the contest at all. It played over a video montage of like Germany doing things. And I had to look into it because I was curious. It was very, very, it was just a very cool song. And I wanted to know more. And it is called Wonderful by Gary Goh, who is a British singer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So not German at all. That song was really good. I also was quite taken aback when that guy did Get Your Freak On for 30 seconds during the interval act. I was not expecting that.
Oh, I have no memories of that interval act whatsoever.
Well, as John DeLay. Yeah, you. As I recall, you did not speak super highly of this interval act
because it was so unmemorable to me. Like, I remember the interval acts from the semifinals a lot more clearly than I do for the final. And I was sober that night. For me, like the interstitial, like non-musical moments that I loved when the host did Satellite to open the show with Stefan Raab and Anke Egloki, who I thought is like an underrated host goddess. Like, she should be up there with Filomena Kautela and Pietra Meda. Anke Engelke for recent hosts.
That's high praise.
I think Anke Engelke is worth it.
Okay.
I'll back that up.
Yeah. Right. But their rendition of Satellite I thought was so fun and very, very Stefan Raab. So very, very cool. Another favorite moment. Anyway.
That's my favorite moment, is that opening Satellite performance.
Oh, I'm sorry. I stole it from you, Derek.
No, it's fine. I want to say, you see different countries and how they handle hosting. And the enthusiasm and joy at the opportunity to host Eurovision was so apparent in Germany, more so than several other countries that we've seen. They were ecstatic. And the way the energy just builds and builds and builds as they do this performance, and the number of performers and singers, it just gets bigger and bigger. And all the Lena lookalikes come on stage, and then she comes on stage, and it just was this crazy, fun moment that felt like so good to watch. Like they were so happy and proud of themselves, which I don't know. I don't think other countries have kind of matched that.
I think that the fact that they hadn't hosted Eurovision since 1983, they had been waiting a long, long time for this. And Stefan Raab in particular is a Eurovision super fan. He basically was part of the group that helped pick Lena and helped pick songs for a couple of years. He performed for the country a couple of years ago, a couple of years previous, with the crazy song Vada Hada Do Da Da, which I think was the year 2000.
And Vada also, Hada, huh?
Again, yes. Yeah, again, do yourself a favor. Vada Hada Do Da Da. Good luck if you can spell it. But yeah, so he just took the opportunity with both hands and grabbed onto it. And I thought he was exceptionally adept as a host. That's what he does. I'm trying to think of an American equivalent. Somebody who is...
You kind of compared him to Conan O'Brien.
A little, yeah. At one point. Yeah, if Conan were a little bit more musically adept and known for that, it kind of has that vibe. Anyway, so everybody has everybody said their favorite moments? Shall we flip it?
The worst moment is when Azerbaijan won.
Yep,
that was mine.
Yeah, that was one half of mine.
Ooh. We've already discussed it so much in the overrated song. I feel like we are literally
For me, I had the added issue of I've fallen in love with this contest and I wanted to go for every year for the rest of my life. How the hell am I going to get my ass to Azerbaijan?
That's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story for a whole other podcast, I think. My second, it wouldn't say my worst moment, but probably one of my more awkward moments that could have been a lot worse. After which semifinal was it? Whatever semifinal Sweden was in, which I think was the second. I was coming back to the press center after being in the hall, and I was talking to one of my friends saying, I cannot, I hate the Swedish song. Like, I know it was going to qualify. And I see my friend kind of her eyes widen just a little bit, and she kind of motions like, Sam, just over your shoulder. And I turn, and it's the songwriter. Thank God he didn't hear me. Because that would have been a very, very bad moment if I had just insulted Popular in front of Fredrik Kempe. But yeah, that was a moment of, ugh. So
you deserve to be taken down a peg.
Coming in third place, I think, was probably the down pegging that they got.
No 21 points.
Oh, man. Sweden.
Sweden.
Yikes.
What a moment.
What a moment. So yeah, that was another one of my patented Sam sticks foot in mouth moments. They don't happen often, but when they do, they do.
All right. We've talked about everything there is to possibly discuss, except the worst songs and the best songs. Let's start with the worst. Derek.
This one was easy for me. Lithuania just, to me, was awful. And I watched the show in its entirety. I think I skipped past this song after about a minute. I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I don't even hear this anymore. I think she was just awful. That's all I have to say on that subject. Danny?
It's the UK. It's Blue. The only way that this could have been worse is if they were dressed as a airline flight crew.
Or Smurfs.
Yes, if they were dressed up as the animated characters in Eiffel 65's Blue Dabba D video. Actually, I think that would have made this an incredibly great performance. Unfortunately, it's four guys in some pretty bad costumes trying to make me feel sad about something. Unfortunately, the UK's tried and true method of doing poorly, I swear to God, I say this every time we bring up the UK, are they trying to get last? That is all. Eric?
Well, my race to the bottom was fairly competitive.
Yeah.
but I feel like I got to make a choice right now. And I have to give the edge just a little bit to Romania.
What is this one?
Change by Hotel FM.
It's a song about changing the world, but it's the least inspiring music I've ever heard. It motivates me to change the channel more than changing the world. It also has, and this isn't the most important thing, obviously, but it has the saddest pyro right at the end.
Aww.
There's just a tiny little like a couple of little yes, honestly, yeah. It's like a small fart with what is technically considered pyrotechnics. But seriously, yeah. It's only at the very end, and it is truly the saddest pyro that you can imagine. The whole thing is just really unfortunate and does not work for me. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Romania.
You see, for me, like the only songs that I really disliked, luckily for me, didn't end up in the final. So, you know, I can't talk about Emmy's Boom Boom Chaka Chaka for Armenia, for example.
The original Chainsaw U.
That's a good... Would I rather listen to Boom Boom or Chainsaw U? I would rather listen to the studio version of Boom Boom over Chainsaw U, but I would rather listen to Chainsaw U over the live version of Boom Boom.
Oh, my.
Yeah. For worst on the night, in terms of, like, just disappointing... I hate to say it, but France really broke a lot of people's hearts by having all those technical difficulties. He couldn't hear himself sing, so he went off key from the very beginning, and he ended up looking like a scared little lion cub going on his first hunt. It just did not turn out well for the guy who a lot of people thought was going to win. But for least favorite song, it's a strange bastardized combination in a blender between Sweden's Popular and Russia's Get You. Both of them have the smarmy, over-testosteroned, over eager.
Russia is the epitome of, is he good or is he just tall? Like, the way that he looks at the camera sometimes is just like, he is 100% positive he's the hottest guy in the entire stadium. And it is so apparent. He's really greasy. I have to agree with you.
Yeah, it turns me off immediately. Even if it's a beautifully slick piece of well-composed pop music, I needed a shower every single time. Yeah. I heard Russia, and I wanted to punch a pillow whenever I heard Sweden. So for me, it's very hard to separate those two in my head.
Yeah.
I'll show you how to be popular.
All right. All that's left now is for us to give our top five. This honestly wasn't even that hard for me this time. All I knew is it wouldn't have Azerbaijan in it.
Ooh.
Who wants to start
now
out here?
I just feel like we're kicking Azerbaijan when they're down.
What do you want? They sucked.
They won. They won the contest.
Yeah.
They hosted. They're good.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
All right. Sam, let's start with you. What is your top five?
All right. In fifth place, I'm going to have to give it to Serbia's Charoban by Nina. That was one of my absolute favorites. I mentioned before, I thought the styling and the costuming was absolutely prime. She was a delight to interview. I think she's currently living in Australia now, living a wonderful life. Yeah, Nina's Charoban was my fifth place altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth place, changing gears entirely, I give it to Eldrine from Georgia with One More Day.
Oh, you like that one?
I love that one. Yeah. I genuinely do. I normally am not one for nu metal or anything in that genre, but I thought that Sofo, the lead female vocalist, I thought that her vocals were fantastic. I love this one, and I still do. I rock out to it often. So that's fourth place for me. Third place is a song that I don't think we've talked about on the show very much at all. It's the song that got the most 12 points from all the countries this year. It's Bosnia and Herzegovina, Dino Merlin's Love and Rewind. And I think it is sweet. I think it is wistful. I think it is heartfelt and genuine. And there's something about Bosnia's entries at Eurovision that to me just hits an emotional chord, whether it's joy or wistfulness or just kind of makes my heart swell with some sort of emotion. I love it. And they do it time after time after time. And Love and Rewind for me encapsulates that. I love it. Dino is an absolute treasure. Yeah. So that's third place for me. Second place, I mentioned it before, Germany, Taken by a Stranger from Lena. Just really brilliant staging, great hometown entry. It's shocking to me that that's one of the five songs that didn't get a 12 points from anybody.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Not a single dues. Yeah. Which breaks my heart because they deserved so much more. But for Lena to come back as the defending champion, that it was a gutsy enough move. But to do it with a song that was so different from the song that she had sent the previous year, it showed versatility and growth as an artist that I really appreciated. It was a cooler presentation and staging. So yes, second place, Germany, Taken by a Stranger from Lena. And my number one, which for a long time held the candle as my number one Eurovision song of all time, that had to go to Italy. Rafael Gualazzi, Madness of Love. I thought it was genuine and honest. Italy came into Eurovision that year having not participated since 1997. And I think they came into the 2011 contest without any of the pretenses of going into it with, okay, we're going to win the contest. It's just, we're going to dip our toes back in the water and see what happens. And having interviewed Rafael, like, he didn't really care how he was going to come on the scoreboard. And it came across in a very sort of genuine way. He's a incredibly talented artist. I had the pleasure of attending like the Italian little mini party that they had. They had sort of a showcase just for Raphael and his band, where he basically just played his new album. And he's an incredible, incredible talent, singer, songwriter, all that good stuff. And I loved how genuine the song was and how real it was. And it got me into a genre that I don't normally delve into. But yeah, for a long time, basically until Salvador came along, this was my number one Eurovision entry of all time. So number one, Follia d'Amore, Madness of Love, Raphael Guazzi.
Sam likes to be taken to Lounge Town.
Do they have comfy pillows there?
Sounds like.
I have to give an honorable mention, though. If they had made it to the final, Bulgaria's Na Na by Polygenova would have made it onto this list. Yep.
It would probably have been my number one had it made the final, and it didn't. Oops.
Right. Broke a lot of hearts.
She All right. came back.
Hell yeah, she did. Who's next?
Fair. I want to hear it.
Okay. I'll go quick. For me, number five was Germany. I think it's a much better song. I think she grew a lot in a year, and it's moody. I love that. Number four, Bosnia and Herzegovina. I don't know how he came sixth, but I guess second place will really kill you. Number three was Serbia. I think Ewan described it. He said it's not the 70s, but it's what you think the 70s is. And I think that perfectly captures it. Number two is Moldova. That song was grossly underrated. Just watching the show again, it was so much fun. I loved it. I loved every second of it. I thought it was fantastic. And my number one is Greece. I know.
Great song.
It's such a fantastic song.
That's a great performance.
That songwriter is a heartbreaker, though.
Oh, yeah. My only complaint is I wish they would have done something more with the chorus, because he just kind of repeats it over and over again, and the other guy gets different lyrics. But such an interesting combination of styles, and staging was really cool. I loved it. I still listen to it all the time. Yeah,
so good.
Me?
Yeah, right. You.
It's me.
Get you.
All right. My list is fairly similar to what other people have said, with one exception. So let's just get into it. Number five, Serbia. I was blown away, just completely not expecting this incredibly well-executed retro vibe that this song has, and did it so well, and it was so fun. And you know, you're getting towards the end of the running order, and you're just kind of like, all right, let's do this. And then all of a sudden there's this breath of fresh air practically that I really, really appreciated. Number four, I went with Italy. I think that for the country that straight up rage quit Eurovision in the late 90s to come back and just be like, we're gonna do jazz. We're just straight up sending a jazz singer, deal with it. And to have it be so well received was really, really cool. And I think it's a very, very fun performance and great song. And I wish there were more things like this in Eurovision. Third place, I went with Jedward from Ireland. It's just so fun. It's iconic. It's everything that you want Eurovision to be, I feel like. It's just immensely fun. Second place, I gave to Germany. I've already talked about it. It just nails this mood really, really, really well. Every time I kind of revisited where Germany was for me, it just keeps moving up, and it finished in second. First place, however, is a song I don't think we've mentioned at all.
Yes.
To this point in the show. My first place, my deuce point, is Denmark. New Tomorrow.
No.
By
I had a feeling that was coming from you.
God.
In London.
No.
I can see it. I can see it.
Ugh.
It's... Oh, it does what it
Danny,
does.
Danny, really, be nice. He just had a birthday. Be nice.
It's like if Mumford and Sons had less talent and wanted to change the world. It's so 2011. It is
very 2011.
It is. It's aged like ham.
I don't. Ugh. For what it is, for the context, for whatever, Danny, I understand what you're saying. I just think it's a really nice, really well-executed song. Also, I feel like a friend in London feels like a euphemism for something really weird.
A friend of Dorothy?
Something like that, yeah.
This is the rough draft for Bunbury. Importance of being earnest.
I was amazed. I was waiting for somebody to say something about it at any point, but I just thought, no, I think I enjoyed this one the most. I can see why people would disagree with me, Danny, but I really like this one. I really do. It's very close between that and Germany, I will say. Georgia just missed my top five as well. I thought that was killer.
Thank you.
That was pure, concentrated Georgian Eurovision.
Yeah. So did we actually tabulate numbers? Is anybody actually keeping score of our scores? Or
well, we got to hear Danny's still, don't we?
Oh,
gotta hear mine.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Which is, I am gonna preface this by saying this is the most Danny list that I think I've ever compiled for one of our retrospective shows.
Danny, you can only put Moldova once.
Very good, unfortunately. I will give an honorable mention right off the bat to Germany. I would be remiss to say, for someone who really thinks that Satellite is one of the worst songs in the past 20 years to win Eurovision, I am impressed at how much I really like Picked by a Stranger. So good for her. My number five is Jedward. My number five is Lipstick. It's Ireland deserves it. Go. Good for them. My number four is Finland. I thought they were so unrated that I needed to set aside it. Eric always bemoans these nice low-key songs as a nap you can listen to. And I think he really, it is a very good song. Good enough for number four for me. Number three, I had Čarobán by Serbia.
Yay.
It sounds like Serbia ought to have won based off of how we're voting for them. It really was a perfect retro feel. It really was. At number two, that's where I put Moldova. Moldova's so lucky. Is it my number two? Like a great Gogol Bordello song, it is absolutely wacky, but it never veers quite into tasteless. It really does have staying power. My number one is, as a running trend, a song that I don't think we mentioned at all during the rest of the podcast.
Oh, God.
I'm giving my number one to Angel by Ukraine.
Really?
I really, really like
it. Wow.
Oh, there we go. Yes. Give it to me. I feed off of it. Yes. I can feel your hatred.
The first appearance of the sand painter.
I know. Yeah. Okay. Listen, I wasn't giving her any points for staging. I really like the song.
So have you seen Anka's version of it?
I don't need to.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Anka Engelke. The performance that we are alluding to is one of the reasons why I put Anka Engelke in the same league as Filomena Kautela and Pietra Mieda as one of the greatest hosts of the last 20 years. Take that, Toto Coutinho.
All right.
Toto.
We'll link to this on our Twitter, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Danny, I'm just gonna say, like, shut up.
That kind of show.
You had the nerve to criticize my enjoyment of Denmark, and then you're like, I think Ukraine was great. Anyway.
What would you have done if I would have said number one is Azerbaijan?
We would have found another Danny for the podcast.
Yeah. It's the untimely end of 12 points from America, I think, probably.
Sam, let them all know how they can yell at me for deciding to respect Ukraine.
Fair enough. Well, you can yell at Danny, basically just through the ether because he's not on Twitter, but you could yell at all of us as a collective on Facebook or Twitter at 12pointsUSA. We'd love to hear from you. Email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Again, whatever podcast service you're listening to us on, feel free to subscribe, like, and subscribe. But leave a review if you can. Leave us a couple of those pretty star-shaped objects that you can click on and give us many, many points to the algorithm so people can listen to us. There are many, many Eurovision podcasts out there, even quite a few from the US. We're very, very happy you're listening to us, but we always want to know how we can make it better. Eric, have you actually been tabulating the scores for this, or are we just throwing numbers around? Do we have a 12 points from America winner?
Yeah, Denmark.
Yeah. Eric, you're off the podcast.
All right.
I'm positive it's Serbia. Is it Serbia or is it Germany?
It's probably Germany. I have not been accumulating. I can do so. I will do so at some point and put it up on the Twitters. But my guess would be Germany followed by Serbia, possibly the other way around.
I think Germany ranks higher than most people.
I would be cool with either of those as our winners.
Yeah. I haven't gotten this much guff from Derek since giving 7 points to North Macedonia.
I didn't give you any guff.
Yeah, you did.
For Ukraine?
I specifically remember you during our 2020 episode going, so you're the reason why North Macedonia is here.
I mean, yeah.
Well, that's us. Let us know what you thought about the 2011 competition. We'll probably do more episodes like this in the future. Now that Eurovision, again, is only doing it once a month, maybe we'll do something similar. Who knows? But let us know what other contests you want to hear our takes on as well. We'd be happy to revisit some of the old ones, especially if they're easily available via YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
So until then, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Danny.
And America.
Stop listening now.
Now.
you really think you're the f***ing hottest. Oh,
we got our singer.
Anyway,